Chapter 8. Hair Stories. Amanda is one of Zoe's constants and a rock in her life. People often let her down. Men always let her down. But Amanda never did. She always came out feeling more hopeful and better about herself as a result of sitting in Amanda's chair for a few hours. Donnie helped too, in his own way. On this occasion, Zoe needs Amanda to pull out her magic. Her session with Clara has destabilised her and made her question herself a lot. She is ready to change things about herself, starting with her hair. "Zoe, are you okay? How are things? How was the dinner date?" says Amanda, bracing herself for the obvious catalogue of disaster that's about to unfold. Zoe sighs. "I need a makeover. I messed it up again. Do you want the long or the short version?" "Whichever one you want to tell me." Zoe doesn't need a second invite and rehashes the whole of the date, including all of the culinary preparations and the very unfortunate ending. "The one good thing that has come about is that it's forced me to get some help. So my friend has recommended a therapist, and I've already been to see her." "And how did that go?" "Well, I was a bit disappointed at first, as I thought she was going to help me sort my love life out and give me a proper strategy to find someone, especially as I'm not finding the laws of dating that helpful. But what she has done is help me understand that I really need to love myself first. I need to get me sorted before I can let anyone else in." "That sounds very sensible, Zoe. When we're happy and confident about who we are, we attract the right people. It's just how it works." "How funny. That's what Clara says. Do you think it's going to take long, though? My eggs aren't going to last forever." Donnie appears, having only overheard this snippet of the conversation. "Eggs? How do you want them, love? Boiled, scrambled, fried, sunny side up?" He pauses for dramatic effect. "Or fertilised?" He bursts into peals of laughter and flaps his elbows around like chicken wings. He's one of those people who doesn't need the audience to laugh at his jokes, as he finds himself highly amusing. Zoe and Amanda groan and roll their eyes at him. "Donnie, if you're going to eavesdrop, at least have something useful to offer," says Amanda. "That was advice. Get 'em fertilised, girl, you broody mare." Both women can't help but laugh at him. "Donnie, go sweep the floor," commands Amanda. With a flick of his blue hair, he struts off in search of the broom, giving a final backward glance at both of them. "I'm so glad I'm not a woman." Zoe and Amanda lock eyes for a nanosecond, in a moment of silent understanding. "Do you know what? I feel better already," smiles Zoe. In another part of the capital, in a smart and understatedly expensive salon in Mayfair, Joan, Robert's mother, is waiting to get her customary natural silver-tinged bob trimmed. She's known her stylist for 30 years. Jay is a well-known and sought-after stylist, known for dabbling with the tresses of many a celebrity and the occasional minor royal. His salon is frequented by members of the aristocracy and well-connected men and women. It is discreet, and his extortionately high prices and Rottweiler manager ensures that no riffraff are entertained. He has at least a 3-month waiting list, whether they're real clients or not. He maintains his reputation and relevance to a modern audience by featuring on the occasional TV show and having his work featured on the cover of several upmarket magazines. A mention of him in Tatler doesn't do him any harm. This has guaranteed a certain mystique and enduring brand quality. Most of his loyal and regular clientele require a certain level of sleek, upper-middle-class conformity. He delivers unfailingly. He's dressed in the ubiquitous moccasins, designer jeans and crisp white shirt with a high collar. His own hair is highlighted blonde and styled in his signature cut, a layered man bob, which has been slightly modified over the decades to suit the current trend. He smiles, displaying gleaming white veneers as Joan enters. And he takes in every detail of Joan's presentation as she approaches his chair and sits down. Secretly, he's thinking that she's not as well put together today, but he would never dream of saying so. "My darling Joan, so delightful to see you again. You're looking splendid. I take it all is good with you. The usual?" Joan, usually extraordinarily composed, suddenly bursts into tears. Jay is completely unnerved. He believes that tears have no place in his salon. He's a little unsure of how to respond and calls out to a trainee to bring tissues and tea. "My darling, what is it?" "My son's in hospital. I don't even know if he's going to make it. I was going to cancel, but I didn't want to let you down. What's happened to Robert? He was in a car accident. He hit a truck head-on and is currently in a coma in St. Thomas's. Dear Lord, how awful for you. That's dreadful. Oh, you poor thing. Is there anything I can do? Pray? I don't know what else you can do. Well, don't you worry. I'm going to make you gorgeous so when he wakes up, you'll be the vision of an angel by his side. He'll get better just by seeing you. Joan smiles feebly. The trainee appears with the tea and tissues. Joan, this calls for more than tea. Bring us champagne. The vintage one. This calls for drastic measures, and I think I need one too. Joan doesn't argue with him. She's usually a very light drinker, but in this case manages to drain the glass almost in one. It is soon replaced with another. Jay focuses on perfecting her hair, taking extra care, and chattering on about the latest celebrity gossip. It's a good distraction for her, and she finds it all surprisingly soothing. By the time she leaves, she feels much lighter, albeit a little tipsy. She goes straight back to the hospital. Across town, Letitia and Joe arrive at their funky retro-style barber salon in Farringdon to get their hair done. The salon is a mixture of chrome, retro old school, with a bit of disco thrown in. It all blends seamlessly together. There's a bar at one end and a shiatsu chair at the other to soothe tired shoulders. A dazzling array of products, including shiny pomades, grace the window display. It's aimed at the metrosexual male, the hipsters, and the women with attitude. Letitia and Joe feel perfectly at home here. They never get the same haircut twice. Even though they're pretty faithful to their hairdressers, they sit side by side, and it's often a four-way conversation. Rob is the archetypal hipster, with a very curated long beard, and Ellie currently has her hair shoulder length and rainbow-coloured, completely shaved on one side. She carries it off because she's very pretty and confident with it. Rob rarely smiles as he's too cool for school, but he still loves to chat. His preferred conversations are deep and a little existential, peppered with random quotes he picks up from his very eclectic Instagram feed. Ellie, on the other hand, loves to share stories of her drunk and debauched weekend adventures at random festivals. Between them, they make a fascinating study of human nature. Letitia and Joe find them hugely entertaining. Meanwhile, Emma, Zoe's sister, is getting her hair done in Highgate Village. She has her appointment set for the entire year, every 6 weeks, on the dot. At the same time, a morning appointment after she's dropped the children to school and visited the gym for her spin class. Her biggest concern is that her stylist will leave and then her world will fall apart. Jasmine is 28, very hardworking and has a knack for working with difficult clients. Emma is at the highest level of this category. She's a code red. She has to steel herself to be extra patient, nice. She remembers a time a few years ago when she cut off a quarter of an inch more than Emma wanted. She nearly had a nervous breakdown there and then in the salon. She has recognised that there is a ritual and it is not to be broken or adjusted in any way. That includes any shifting of the appointment time. For this level of service, Emma is prepared to pay a hefty sum. She wants to take no chances. And she regularly likes to remind Jasmine of this fact. Emma does have beautiful hair, but it is rendered somewhat plain under the severity of the haircut, which is a completely unyielding precision-cut lob or long bob. Jasmine had tried suggesting some variations over the years, but Emma's look told her not to go any further, so Jasmine complied. Emma wasn't her favourite client, but she tipped well. And better than that, she had no desire to have any conversation whatsoever. She came, armed with her copies of Homes and Gardens, which her homes had been featured in more than once, and the occasional copy of Hello. She was always planning her next home project. This usually involved ripping some perfectly good kitchen or bathroom out and replacing it with whatever was the latest in vogue concept. At the moment, she was particularly obsessed with grey, oblong box-style conservatory kitchens with electrically sliding glass doors and matching slate grey tiles everywhere. Even if this did not completely match her period home, she'd had her heart set on this and had already commissioned the builders. She was convinced she had the most on-point refurbishment on her road. This was important to her, and Miles was very happy to provide the financial means for her to do this. He liked to have a showroom-style home to bring the occasional client home to and to reflect his success, both at home and at work. Emma saw this as a useful research time and had no intention of telling her hairdresser anything at all about herself, ever. Emma's handsome husband, Miles, is also getting his hair done. He's in the salon barber store, which is attached to his health club, where he's a daily attendee. His visits to the salon happen every month, because he too likes to be perfectly groomed. His long on top and short faded sides and back are taken care of by whomever happens to be the top stylist. This changes quite frequently. And although he has no real attachment to the person, he's very attached to the place. He expects a certain level of quality, and they always deliver. If time permits, he also has a full shave. He has a bi-weekly manicure, and once a month he treats himself to a pedicure. There is the occasional visit to the waxing room, where his bronzed and toned chest and abdomen are completely stripped, and very occasionally, as it's all he can cope with, usually before a holiday or a business trip, he pops in for a waxing of his back and crack. Miles presents as buffed, bronzed, polished and preened. He's very pleased with what he sees in the mirror, and he considers it all to be worth the time, effort, pain and sacrifice. It fits perfectly with his personal motto, which is ABC. Always be in control. On this occasion, his stylist, a particularly attractive, tall, dark, handsome male called Pierre, is asking him a lot of questions. He's quite keen to find out more about him. "So, I can see you are a regular at the gym. You obviously like to take care of yourself," says Pierre coquettishly. "Yes, I keep in shape. I do what I can," says Miles, not entirely liking where the conversation is going. "Looks like you do a little more than that," Pierre says with a sheepish grin. "You're fit." "Thanks," Miles says. "My wife likes me to take care of myself." "Oh, you're married?" "Very." Miles brings out his phone and shows Pierre a picture of him, Emma and the two children. "Gorgeous." Pierre looks a tad disappointed and retreats into small talk about the weather and upcoming holidays. Pam, Zoe's mum, whose hair has been long and in a bun since her time as a nurse, is at home cutting and colouring her own hair. She's using a permanent tint by L'Oreal from Boots. She hasn't changed the caramel brown colour since she started colouring it 10 years ago. She rarely wears her hair down, and therefore hardly ever blow dries it. As a result, it's in surprisingly good condition. Patrick, Zoe's brother's, hair is long, unruly and tied up in a man bun. He usually gets whichever stylist happens to be on set a couple of times a year to cut it all off, and then he grows it all over again. He is currently in long hair mode, but when a very hot young stylist appears in his latest photo shoot, he decides it's time to have a little trim. It's not all he wants, and what Patrick wants, he gets. George, Zoe's dad's, hair is being cut in a traditional Italian barbershop by Mario, who's a few years older than he is. He's still getting the same short back and sides and long on top style that he's had since he was a teenager. As with most things, styles eventually come back into fashion, and he's found himself totally back in vogue. George was in his day a good-looking man. But over time he's lost his edge a little. Too much sitting in his cab, sitting at home watching TV when he's not driving, and eating junk food have left him overweight and looking much older than his years. This doesn't register for Mario, who still treats him like a teenager. "Georgie, you want to take something for the weekend, would ya?" "Mario, it was no last time. It's been no for the last 15 years. But thanks for thinking I might still be in need," George says laughing, and the two men embrace, slapping each other's shoulders. "See you in a few weeks." Sam is at home in her kitchen, and the gang are all there. Sandra, Wendy and Lizzie, as well as her stylist Trudy, who's another friend from school. Trudy, who works in the local salon, Head Matters, is accompanied by her two colleagues, Melanie and Magda. Melanie is an upbeat, impeccably groomed stylist who takes care of nails and pedicures with a sideline Indian head massage and hand massages if requested. Magda specialises in minor cosmetic procedures, skincare and peels, and her claim to fame is that she did the faces of celebrities who've appeared on Love Island and also Made in Chelsea. They know what all the latest trends are. The stylist's visit to Sam and the gang is a 6-weekly event, which takes up most of the day. The kitchen table is laden with snacks, cupcakes, Prosecco and chocolate. It's a time to catch up on all the latest gossip, and there are bags and boxes of hair products all over the kitchen worktops. "So, Sam, my lovely, what are we doing this time? Do you want to go a bit more daring this time? Sex it up a bit," Trudy says. She'll need a lot more than a bloody haircut to sex her up, Lizzie chortles, spraying Prosecco all over the floor. The girls all laugh. Sam is not amused and remains stony-faced. I will just have the usual, thank you. Gareth likes me just the way I am. Frigid, you mean? Lizzie replies. Like the Snow Queen from The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. She laughs her head off and the rest of the girls are desperately trying not to laugh as Sam is glaring at them. Lizzie, you always have to go to the lowest level. Yep, proper down and dirty suits me fine. She and all the girls shriek with laughter. Sam tries to regain some sense of her own dignity by attempting to laugh with them, but the slight snarl on her upper lip gives away her discomfort. Anyway, enough your boring love life. What's going on with Zoe? Have you heard? Sam shakes her head. I haven't heard anything for a while. I'll call her in a bit. I need a bit of sexing up, Trudy. What can you do? Sandra says. She's a hairstylist, not a bloody miracle worker, you know, Lizzie says. Well, I read in Cosmo that tantric sex is the way to go. I'm going to find my inner goddess. That way I reckon Pete will find me irresistible. I'm doing this breathing exercise at the moment and opening up my chakras and whatever they're called, Sandra continues. Ooh, I read that. I wanted to try it on Saturday, but Johnny wasn't having any of it. Thought I was hyperventilating and asked if I was having an asthma attack. He got so worried he couldn't get it up. And that was me not done for another week. Had to get extra batteries for my rabbit this weekend, says Wendy. I bet you've got a standing order with Duracell, haven't you, Wend? Says Lizzie. Well, it's better than having a complete arsehole for a husband, says Wendy. He might be an arsehole, but he's my arsehole. And when he goes at it, there's no need for any of that tantra bollocks or inner goddess crap. Just good old-fashioned proper shagging. Oh, shut up, you lot. I'm going to call Zoe. I'm sure her crap is a lot more interesting than Dave and his shagging abilities. Poor Zoe. At least we've all got men. That poor love couldn't find herself a man in a football stadium, says Sam, slightly smug, although she is trying to sound empathetic. They all nod in silent agreement. Sarah, Robert's sister, is sitting in a basement in Chalk Farm near her home in Camden, having her hair attended to by Felicity. She's a dreadlocked, tattooed eco-warrior. She's persuaded Sarah not to put any synthetic products on her hair, including not washing her hair with shampoo, but using Lush instead. Fortunately, Sarah has been blessed with very strong hair, so even without being tinted or properly washed, she still looks beautiful. How was your trip to Calais? Sarah asks her. Oh, a maze. Oh my God, those poor people. We did what we could, bringing them food and clothes, but it's never enough. I've been on marches in Paris, Rennes, Marble Arch. Solidarity and the love vibe was just beautiful. Do you think anything's really going to change? Oh yeah, you can see the consciousness shifting. We had some amazing conversations with people. You'd be better off having them with the people in Whitehall. Yeah, all we need is the 10%. Then we hit the tipping point and it'll all shift. What tipping point? You know, haven't you read Rupert Sheldrake? Do you mean Malcolm Gladwell? Oh yeah, well, him too. Sarah wasn't convinced that she had heard of him, but was too polite to say so. Anyway, enough about me. How are things with you? Not so great. Robert, my brother, was in an accident. He's in the hospital in a coma. We've been there for days, but I was starting to go a bit stir-crazy. I just feel so helpless. My mum insisted I looked a total mess and should come and get my hair done. Right now, I need anything to take my mind off what's happening with him. Oh my God. I'm so sorry to hear that. What have the doctors said? That it's not great. But he's in the best hands in the hospital. I know they're taking care of him and they're doing everything they can. Oh, I'm sure he'll be fine. He's strong. He can get through this. He'll be back out and driving you crazy again before you know it. Sarah nods and smiles more convincingly than she feels. Felicity can feel her discomfort and changes the subject. Anyway, how's the anonymous blog going? Great. I'm getting a lot of comments and likes. Quite a large number of trolls, so I must be hitting a nerve. It turns out being anti-vaccine and anti-some meds for kids is quite a controversial subject. I bet, but you're doing a great job. Someone needs to expose Big Pharma and the damage it's doing. It may as well be you. Yeah, I just have to be really careful, my job and all. I really can't afford to lose it. But I really want to help those kids as much as I can. Exposing how bad this stuff really is and getting them off Ritalin is my mission. We don't want to raise a nation of junkies. Felicity shivers. Damn right we don't. Anyway, Your secret is safe with me. Sarah nods in thanks. Hair done, feeling a little brighter, she heads back to the hospital. In a New York barber in Lower Manhattan next to Wall Street, Leo is getting a hot shave, a manicure and a trim. His barber, an old Italian called Franco who owns the establishment, has taken care of him for the last 25 years off and on. So Leo, as business, are you killing it? Damn right I am, Franco. I got all these new lawyers with their fancy ways coming in, telling me how to run the business. They don't get that I am the business. These punks have no idea. All they want to do is go on a holiday, giving me this work-life balance shit. In law, there is no work-life balance. It's all about the hours, the billing, and winning.